Blog Talk Radio. My thanks goes out to Morgan Baum tonight. She is the musical artist that we're highlighting. That piece you were listening to was a snippet from her piece called Song of the Siren. And if you like that, you can find more of her beautiful music at her website called sacredhands.org. I hope you're all enjoying the summer. Wherever you are on the globe, I hope it's not too hot wherever you are. And my thanks goes out again this week to those of you who have been so generous with your prayers and good wishes for my husband Roy's recovery from surgery. Just to let you all know, he's doing pretty good. You know, he's taking little baby steps, little by little, and eventually he'll be better with his new bionic knee, as he calls it. And he says he'll be better than he's been in a long, long time. When he's all well, he wants to climb the Pyramid of the Sun and the Moon outside Mexico City. That's his goal. So I keep dangling that carrot in front of him when the pain gets intense in his rehab. So hopefully he will be Teotihuacan bound. But thanks from both of us for your caring and continued good energy and support. And I want to be sure to take a minute before we get to one of our favorite returning guests tonight, Patrick McCullum, to make mention that last Thursday, August 12th, at about 11 a.m. Pacific time, I believe, pagan scholar and community forefather Isaac Bonowitz passed away peacefully in his sleep. I am told that all his brothers and sisters arrived to be at his side the night before his passing and to say their goodbyes. In case you didn't know, Isaac had been sick and he died of cancer. Isaac was a pagan author and educator, as well as being the founder of a Druid organization whose name I can't pronounce, but its letters are ADF. It was a neo-pagan Druid group. He was born in 1949 in Michigan to Catholic parents. He attended UC Berkeley, where he was able to design his own course of study and graduated with a degree in magic, the first and last person ever to do so. He's survived by his wife, Phaedra, his son, Arthur, Lip Bonowitz, and thousands of friends and fans around the world. In early August, Isaac announced that all of his scholarly papers would be donated to the University of California and Santa Barbara Library and their American Religion section. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Isaac and his family, and we just want to remind you that the medical costs really did devastate his family. There is a site on Facebook where people can contribute to help if you'd like. You know, if a million of us sent a dollar or a thousand of us sent $10, you know, it all adds up. Try if you can, because, you know, we like-minded, especially we have to help our own. And speaking of goddess men who are making a difference in the world, we have another for your listening and learning pleasure tonight. As I said, Patrick McCullum is returning to the show at my request with some updates on his important work and lots of new announcements. I'm so proud of him. I can't wait for him to share all the news with you. But let me read a brief bio on Patrick, just in case this is your first introduction to him. Patrick was the first government-recognized Wiccan chaplain in the United States. He currently advises numerous state and federal agencies on Wiccan religious practices and is a member of the American Correctional Chaplains Association. He is the author of a wonderful book called Courting the Lady that I highly recommend. There's a wonderful story in the beginning of the book where he tells about his first experiences as a young boy when he was near death and he saw Goddess. It's very touching. I'll never forget it. Patrick will bring us up to date on his court battle with the state of California regarding religious discrimination and the lack of equality for second-tier religions, as well as discuss the Mahatma Gandhi Award for the Advancement of Pluralism, which he will receive as a pagan on September 14th at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and lots of other new news he's going to share with us. So, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Well, good evening, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing really well, considering I've, you know, been wearing the additional hat of caregiver for the last week.
Yeah, that's a huge responsibility to take care of, and I'm glad to hear that your husband is doing well in that respect.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's getting a little easier every day, you know, but it's a long haul, you know, for rehab, but there's light at the end of the tunnel, so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, you know, for joining us. And, you know, why don't we start with, you know, where we left off on your the last time you were here on the show, which was, I don't know, maybe a little over 6 months ago. Just bring listeners up to date because we've picked up a lot of new people. Give us some background on the case you have with the state of California and where things are at with that, because I think they're moving in a good direction. Isn't that so?
Yes. Well, the essence of the case is fairly simple. I had discovered a number of years ago that the state of California had a policy to promote five faiths over all others in California. And so they had what was called the five state-sanctioned faiths policy. And under that policy, certain preferred faiths get additional accommodation and such for religious services and those kind of things, and all the other faiths weren't receiving that. And so and they also would not hire any chaplains from any Wiccan goddess-related religious practices, nor a number of other practices like Buddhists and many others. And so ultimately, when I sued them on behalf of myself and all the inmates in California, they filed a response as a portion of the court case, making the argument that under the United States Constitution, there is only one recognized religion that's protected under the Constitution in the United States, and that is Christianity. And then they made a concession that if the court were not to find that Christianity is the only religion that should be protected under the Constitution, then at the very most, it should only be one of the monotheistic Abrahamic faiths.
Now, how could they get away with that?
You know, it's the craziest thing that I have ever heard in my life, but it's just the position that they had taken. And they are making the argument that the founders of, you know, our Constitution, the United States, when they spoke about religion, that they only meant one religion, and consequently they want the United States Supreme Court to remove all rulings in favor of all other religions that have been made since the founding of the court. And so
that's pretty scary.
It's pretty scary. It's a huge case. This is a landmark case. We are currently in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California, which is one of the most powerful courts in the country. And if for some reason we were to lose in that particular hearing or battle, both sides have said that the case will most likely go on to the United States Supreme Court. And so, you know, I mean, it's a little scary to take on the whole government. I've done that, and it's very costly for me and stressful and et cetera, as you could imagine.
Sure.
But we are moving forward, and I have a great team of attorneys. We're represented by one of the best law firms in the world, And I'd like to mention them. Their name is Jones Day. And the reason I'd like to mention them is that they came forward to defend all of the pagans, Wiccans, and goddess people on their own dime. And for 6 years now, they have been fighting the court case and paying all the additional continued expenses. I had to pay all the original expenses for a couple of years, and then they've taken that over. And so they literally put their money up front and a whole team of attorneys to defend all of us.
That's
and,
awesome.
So they're incredible people, you know, for having done that for us.
Well, you know, Patrick, I could tell from feedback that was coming in around the community on the internet when this started to hit the internet that people were shocked. So they didn't even know that there were two-tier religions. They certainly didn't know what you just, you know, repeated. You know, again, I guess I ask, you know, I thought, you know, all religion was protected under the Constitution. You know, I didn't realize there were, you know, gray areas and varying degrees of protection. I mean, is this just with California or is this across the United States?
Well, unfortunately, the tendency to look at religion, especially in governmental institutions, you know, military, prisons, the Veterans Administrations and such, has a tendency to lean this direction. It's kind of an unsaid policy amongst many institutions to see things that way. And so that's why in our particular case, what was unique was that in the course of filing with the High Court, with the Ninth Circuit, there are organizations that can file on behalf of one side or the other. And so on behalf of the government and the state of California, only one organization filed on their behalf, an organization called Wall Builders, who advocate overthrowing, you know, the government and making it basically a Christian theocracy.
Right.
And on our side of the case, for the side of the pagans and Wiccans and goddess people, we had just a tremendous showing from all religious practices. So, for example, supporting our side of the argument and our right to freedom and practice were the Catholic Correctional Chaplains Association, the American Correctional Chaplains Association, one of the large Jewish organizations, a Hindu organization, a Muslim organization, the president of the Graduate Theological Union, one of the, you know, most respected seminaries in the United States, the head of the Harvard Pluralism Project, Americans United for Separation in Church and State, People for the American Way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so pretty much everybody came out on our side of the argument. However, it's important everyone realize that this is a case being considered by the court, and, you know, one just never knows exactly what will happen, you know, when a court rules on something. I mean, you know, things often seem they should be some particular way, and until that ruling comes down, you don't know.
Well, and I guess I wonder, how could they not rule in your favor? Again, I'm no lawyer, but I'm just working on the presumption that, you know, there's supposed to be protection of religion in the Constitution. I mean, what could they possibly, you know, I mean, how they'd be opposing the Constitution, wouldn't they? Or you'd have to...
Well, they would be, but there are technical ways of getting around different things. And so this is one of these cases where principle is on the line. So you have to understand, if you just took the individual parties, myself suing on behalf of everyone in the state, if the state loses, they will be required, beyond what the Constitution says, to change their policies and start accommodating everyone, which will be a big shift and change for them. It'll require them training administrators and training people and stuff that, you know, they can't discriminate against people and such. And, of course, we all think that they wouldn't do that anyway, but they actually do not have that training, most of them. And so that's what's happening on one side. They stand to lose that and to do whatever. On my side of the argument, one of the things on the line for me is everything that I have, everything I own, my home, everything is on the line in fighting for our rights. So if I lose the case, I will lose everything I have.
Because you mean you've had to mortgage it to pay
bills? I've had to do everything, yes. And so
wow.
Because there's only one way to go against these kind of situations and win, and that's to stick it out.
Right.
And so that's what I've done, and I feel fairly confident. Obviously, I wouldn't put everything I have on the line, but you don't ever know for sure till you get there.
Well,
let me give you one important piece of information I don't want to forget. So it takes an extremely long period of time to actually get before the court to make your oral arguments, and we just got notified a couple days ago from the court, the Ninth Circuit, that our oral arguments in this case are going to be on October 8th in the morning. And so if all your listeners want religious freedom and such, it would be a really good idea to send some energy our way, let our attorneys, you know, talk with eloquence and make compelling arguments and support us, because the court will make their determinations based on what it is that we have to say and our papers, and the state will be arguing as vehemently as possible the opposite.
I see.
So that's important.
Red letter day, October 8th.
Yes. And it's an open court. So, the Ninth Circuit is in San Francisco, California, and if there are people living in that direction that want to look on the docket, the case is McCollum versus the State of California, or McCollum versus the California Department of Corrections, and they can come to court and just be there.
Okay.
So it's a really big event. It's a landmark case. It will affect the religious rights of every person in the United States.
Wow. This makes me wonder, has this been front page news like LA Times, San Francisco Chronicle, anything like that, or has this just really sort of been, you know, under the, sort of an underground thing that's happening?
Most of it has been underground until there was a huge flurry of newspaper articles, a lot of internet response and things like that, when it actually came down to the government had what they call amicus briefs or amici arguing that there's only one true religion protected under the Constitution. That got a lot of people up in arms.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people in general do not, this is one of these things, sneaky things where, you know, the government had hoped to kind of keep this under the radar, and that a ruling would come down and everybody would all of a sudden wake up one day and find out that we have different rights than we thought we had.
Right.
And so luckily that's come out, and everyone should tell everyone they know this is going on. And you can go online and look at the different components of the case and the arguments and such. And we'll talk about a couple of the ways that someone can actually go and take a look at. There's a couple actual sites where the papers filed from each side are up online.
Okay.
But you can actually just put in McCollum versus the California Department of Corrections in like Google or a search engine, and it'll bring up a lot of the arguments and papers in the case.
So I would imagine they're going to argue the case on the 8th, but you probably won't know for a while after that.
Yeah, you know, we've already been waiting for 6.5 years to hear, you know, what's going to happen out of this. And, you know, the thing that people don't really get, since this case originated for prisoners, it began, you know, in a prison system, is that there have been people who have died in the course of this case with their rights being removed. So there have been individuals who are pagans or goddess worshippers, men and women, who've requested to be able to have, you know, rituals for their final passing, to be visited in hospitals as they're on their deathbed and such. And the state has refused them that last comfort or right, saying that they don't have equal rights to have someone be with them when they die or things like that, or have clergy from our clergy visit them, and they have literally died without it. And
you know, it seems immoral to me, quite frankly. You
know,
it's very
immoral, because other religious practices are getting those accommodations. So it isn't about that they're prisoners or something. If you are a Protestant prisoner and you're dying and you want a chaplain or somebody to come and pray for you or sit at your deathbed and hold your hand or something, you get that, hands down, no question. If you're a Wiccan and you want that, it isn't going to happen.
Does it go back? Well, I mean, yes, I know it goes back to the ignorance. It probably goes back to the intolerance. But is it? I mean, do you really think that these people really believe that this is, you know, Wicca is the stuff of the devil?
I do think so.
Or is it just because it's not Christian?
Well, there's two things going on. The one which I identified before is and a term that's being picked up by newspapers and others, or other such venues, is what I call the dominant religious lens factor.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the idea that certain agencies of the government, particularly the California governmental agencies, look at the practices of other religions through the eyes of the dominant faith. So if they look at a faith and its practices and it looks like Protestant Christianity, then it's okay.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't look like Protestant Christianity, there's something wrong with it. So, you know, if a person does something like gets on a prayer rug, they don't do that in Protestant Christianity, so there must be something wrong with that.
Right.
If a person has a goddess statue instead of a statue of Jesus or Mary, there must be something wrong with that. And that's how they operate. And
it's pretty scary in this day and age, quite frankly.
It's very scary, and many of the same people who were making the arguments that some of our other constitutional rights should be taken away, like that we should not have gay marriage, and that we should not, and that we should dispose of the 14th Amendment and such, those are the same people who are also fighting in this system. And something unique that I learned within the California system I never knew before is that many of the people in the actual system dealing with the religion programs, and we're talking administrators, wardens and such, many of them are ministers of certain very far-right Christian groups. And so they have a buy-in into all this.
Yeah, and the deck is sort of stacked.
Yes, but there's another really important thing people need to know, and that is that often, you know, you hear these arguments, particularly if you're a goddess woman or, you know, goddess man, that, you know, they're sort of like Christians who think that we are evil or something like that. That's not actually the case. The very large number of, mainstream Christianity is on our side of the case in this. They're supporting that we should have the rights. They've come and fought for us and spoken for us and marched for us and things like that, and it's important for people to know that. It is one very vocal far-right contingency who are fighting against us, and they are the same people who are fighting against many of the principles a lot of us believe in other ways.
Right.
But they are very active and intend to win this case and to, you know, stop the accommodation of minority, what they call minority faith.
Now, isn't this Ninth Circuit court the same place that just did the gay rights ruling that
yes.
just came down?
It is.
Okay. And is it by any chance the same judge?
No.
Okay.
It isn't a single judge. It's a three-judge panel.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that you end up with in the court also is, you know, you sort of draw through lottery which judges that you're going to have. And if you get three judges that are really conservative in a particular way, they could rule against us, even if, you know, there are certain legal responsibilities that courts have, but judges are people.
Right.
And there is an aspect of their own personal beliefs that plays a part in it all, and if they believe that besides, you know, trying to do what legal is important, that there is a moral obligation that they have or a religious obligation, they sometimes will rule in ways that none of us can see as being right.
Right.
You know,
right.
But again, as I said, I'm hopeful that we will be and that we will win this and go back to court, and ultimately come to some kind of resolution over this issue so that everyone has an equal religious freedom.
You know, I wish you could get this on Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow. Seriously. Hey,
if there's this really should be on that show or one of those shows like that, because this is a huge thing affecting everyone. But, you know, it's much like if you were to go back for, you know, 40 years ago or something like that, and somebody would say, you know, well, they, you know, they killed some people in a march or something like that, but don't worry, they were just some Native Americans, or
yeah.
they were just some Jews, or they were just some, mm-hmm. you know, we're in that same kind of class of,
right.
you know, oh, well, you know, so a few goddess people got killed, I mean, you know, who cares?
Right, right. Well,
the thing
you know,
that they don't, the thing they don't recognize that they are now beginning to recognize is we are moving as a religious entity into, you know, one of the larger religious practices in the United States. And so there are huge numbers of people now coming forward who are, you know, practicing our type of spirituality. So we aren't the little guys anymore. We're big players at the table. It's just that they don't really like that.
Or so many of them might still be under the impression that we don't have the numbers we have.
Well, that's true, but there are, I just met with the Pew Trust about a week ago, and there are new numbers coming out, and it's quite apparent, in these, especially in these governmental institutions. For example, one of the things they brought up in a large meeting that I came into, that in, now I'm talking right now in the correctional systems, and in the military they're looking at this also. But in the correctional systems, there are states where Wicca is the second largest religion.
Wow. Do you remember which state?
Well, I know one of them is Washington.
Okay.
I don't remember all of them, and so it's unique. They have, you know, 100 religions, say, represented, and they have 5 primary faiths in Washington. And out of those 5 primary faiths, the second largest is Wicca, and the only religion that is not represented through any kind of administration, chaplaincy, or any kind of accommodation things is Wicca.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So October 8th, Red Letter Day. You know, I am going to make it a point to try to get in touch with either Keith Oberman or Rachel Maddow. I don't know if I'll be successful, but you know what? I'm going to use the tenacity of SecMet, and I'm going to try.
Well, give it your best shot. And, you know, this falls right in line with things like the mosque at the 9/11 site and other kinds of things, because all these things are governed by this lens factor. You know, we talk about pluralism and having equal rights and such, and what we stand for as a country, and then we often do things that are opposite of what it is that we stand for.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to talk to you about. I mean, it seemed so relevant, you know, considering what your work has been about. You know, what would you, I mean, I've been, you know, on Facebook and on email with people, you know, pagans who don't even get it, that, you know, this should not be an issue, you know. Why don't you can, maybe you can explain more eloquently, you know, why should, you know, this fundamentalist right not be so rabid about this, you know?
You're talking about the mosque issue?
The mosque, yeah.
Yeah, well, so, like, here is my take on that. I have a fundamental principle I use when I judge, you know, whether something is appropriate or not and whether people are being treated equally or differently. So here's my analogy to the mosque issue. When churches were being built after the Oklahoma City bombing, no one was up in arms and complaining they shouldn't be building Christian churches in the area, even though it was a radical right Christian militia group who bombed the Oklahoma, you know, buildings and everything.
You know, that thought actually crossed my mind.
Well, so here's the thing. Why is it that radical Christians can bomb a place in the United States and no one is making an issue of it, but terrorist radical Muslims bomb the place, and we have Muslims in this country who've been here for a long time. We have Muslims who were damaged and hurt in 9/11. We had Muslim emergency workers and such showing up. Muslims died in that incident. Why is it that they are singled out? And
right.
It's because of this religious, dominant religious lens factor. That's,
well,
the
same with the abortion doctor, you know.
Oh, yes.
I remember Rachel Maddow has done some incredible, I don't know if you, do you watch her?
I do, yeah, I like her very much. And, you know, one of the things I like to make a point of, I mean, we all have our personal different reasons for either feeling something is something that is good or bad or should or shouldn't be, and I think we should all have those rights. And I want to say here that, you know, I'm not pro-Muslim nor anti-Muslim, but I'm not pro-Muslim. I am just anti-ignorance.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think we all need to be that. We can have our opinions and our ideals, but we need to not be ignorant about the positions that we take.
Absolutely.
Especially when it deals with human beings' rights and freedoms and safety.
Well, you know, and I guess it's still, I mean, as hard as it is for me to comprehend and wrap my mind around it, the only thing I can come to is that some of these people who would be so quick to take others' rights away, you know, whether it be gay rights or religious rights or whatever it is, somehow they feel entitled. You know, does it go back to this Judeo-Christian, there's only one way thing? And, I mean, does that give them license to dictate?
Well, I believe that some of them, you know, see it or believe it that way, but I also like to, again, go back to that first point I made about how I like to look at people, and I think of it this way. You know, when I listen to someone talk about how they want to, say, you know, do away with the radical Muslims or such, here's their argument. They argue, we should get radical right Christians to take over our country, to establish a theocracy, to combat the concept and idea that someone else is taking radical religious people, overthrowing democracy, any kind of democracy ideas, and establishing a theocracy. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
No, I couldn't even understand what you said, quite frankly.
Well, here's what I said. The argument is we got to stop those bad guys because they are radical religious people who want to establish a theocracy and have God's law run the world.
Right.
From their perspective. And
right.
So in order to counter that, we become radical religious people, try to establish a theocracy, and then take those people on. That's what the far religious right is arguing to do.
Well, then it's, you know, then we're back to the Crusades.
Exactly. And we're also doing exactly what it is that we're criticizing on the other side.
Yeah.
So we are making ourselves exactly like the people. That's their argument, that we should make ourselves exactly like the people who we feel there's something wrong with. So we should be them.
But they don't see us as they're doing the same thing. I mean,
well, neither
like
do
no
the radical
reflection.
Muslims.
Right.
And that's the point. And so here's my thought. You know, whatever side of the argument you're on, there's 1.2 plus billion Muslims in the world. There is never going to be a let's have a war and win situation.
Yeah.
And so there is only one way to resolve this issue, and that's to find common ground and a way to peace.
Right.
And the kind of language and discussions and people getting up in arms that they're doing right now are never going to lead to that. And so we all know that that can't work. Let's say that we took on Islam altogether, and we really did think they were all evil and stuff, which I do not think at all. And then we went to battle with them, and we won. Do you really think 1.2 billion people, just because you won a war against them, are going to stop believing what they believe and everything?
Well, no. I mean, I always put it, you know, I always look at it this way. How would Americans feel if, you know, somebody from another part of the world suddenly invaded our land? You know, would we just, like, lay down and die?
Exactly.
You know, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, it's like they never put the shoe on the other foot. It's just they feel entitled to you know, put forth whatever their ideology or dogma is, and everybody else is supposed to just swallow it.
Well, I can tell you, in sitting down and speaking directly with Muslims and other groups that are, you know, that we have issues and problems with, that just being a regular guy and talking with them about the real issues that are bothering them and the real issues that are bothering us, we're able to find common ground and make suggestions that we can both live with. And
so you think these wedge issues aren't as big as maybe the media or some of these people with an agenda would have you think?
Yes, I think they're not as big. I think there are problem people who exacerbate these issues, but we're giving way too much power to these problem people.
Right.
And so what we need to do is not make the biggest headlines that a group of radical, you know, crazy people in our country are up in arms about something or other. What we should be giving, some more credence and stuff to is that people from around the world are having meetings here and in other countries where they're saying, we have a serious problem here, and people from both sides of the table are coming together and saying, let's work it out.
Mm-hmm.
How come we don't see that on the front page?
Right, yeah, that doesn't get any press.
No.
In fact, you know, I often say to other religious leaders I run into, it seems like, at least from, you know, the lens that, you know, that I see from my television, whether it be local news, national news, cable news, whatever, you know, we never really see the good Christians speaking out. We just see the loud, noisy, sort of hate-monger Christians. It's always the extreme views we see. So we never really see the people that are talking about, you know, let's get together and make the world a better place. And you know, so it leaves you to think that there's nobody out there. There's no hope. You know, it's just
there are many
the
of
end
them.
Times.
Right. But one thing we have to be really careful of, and this is the thing I fear the greatest. They always say history repeats itself. And if you look back in history, you will see that many times the, quote, silent majority, whether it be Christian or whether it was pagan in the past or whether it was Buddhist or whatever it is, they often don't speak up because they feel like they don't have power to do a lot, or they feel like it's so crazy, who would possibly ever move forward with it?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you find yourself in some place like Nazi Germany,
right,
where radical people on one side all of a sudden are in power.
Right.
And the regular, ordinary people who have something to say don't have anything to say anymore.
Right.
And so I think it's important to give voice to the average person, and that it's important to lessen the powerful voice that we're giving to these people who are very radical, and that there needs to be a sense of responsibility by all people, the people on the far right, the people on the far left, people in the middle, and the news media. There needs to be a responsibility by all of us to go, you know what, the world's getting really small, really close together, everyone knows everyone else's business. They go shoot somebody over in Afghanistan, now you can see it on the internet 5 minutes later. So what we need to do is we need to turn all this tremendous intellect, power, and passion that we have into finding a way to all making it together.
Well, Patrick, you know, this was actually going to be one of my closing questions, but we're here now. Give some advice to the average person out there how they can be an instrument of this. You know, if they sort of feel like they don't have any influence, how are they going to make a difference? What can, you know, if you're not, you know, the leader of a church or, you know, what can just the average person do?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of things that you could do. Many years ago, I studied martial arts, and the guy in the system I studied, I asked the question, I said, you know, I often wish I could change the world, but I'm just one guy. What could I ever do? And he pointed down and said, see the ant, the tiny ant, fragile and small, yet with each grain of sand it carries, it changes the face of the earth. And from that little saying, I got the idea that, you know, each of us, by taking some action, something happens. Maybe it's not big. Maybe it is. You don't ever know. But if you take any action, some reaction takes place to it. If today, a billion ordinary, normal, everyday people who never speak up just got on the email and sent an email to their senator or the president of the United States or whoever the heck they might choose to do it, trust me, if a billion emails came into the White House or came into whatever it is, things would change. So it requires us standing up for things that we believe in. It requires us taking a little bit of time to try to make a change. And I can tell you firsthand, I am about as ordinary as you can get as far as, you know, what I think about, what I believe in, and those kind of things in relationship to the average American. And I have chosen to take action and to speak up and to not be silent. And I am having an impact. And I'm just one guy. And so each of us can do that. And it's only by choosing to do that that we can make a difference.
Well, and I'd almost go so far as to say we have an obligation, I think, to do that. To not use our voice, to not employ that sacred roar. It's almost like we're guilty by our silence.
Yes, we are. So, anyway, everyone out there listening, you can make a difference. You can go on the internet or on telephone. You can find telephone book. You can find the numbers and stuff for every senator, congressperson, and other person who has effects on these different things that you're interested in. Even with the courts and stuff, you can write letters to them. You can weigh in. And, you know, it doesn't take that much effort. It's very small effort. You can make one phone call or write one letter to your own state senator. And when a state senator gets one letter, whatever party, Republican, Democrat, or Independent, they figure that there's 1,000 people or more out there who are going to send that same letter and didn't do it.
Okay.
And so we are 1,000 times more powerful than we think by just writing a letter.
Okay. Well, so in terms of writing letters, would it do any good to write the Ninth Circuit Court about your case?
Well, here's my thought on that. They say that when the court received letters and such, that they aren't allowed to weigh them. There are official ways you can weigh in, which it's too late to do now, and that was to file an actual, what they call, amicus brief with the court. They say the court doesn't weigh letters, but I guarantee you, if a judge's clerk is sitting there and all of a sudden gets 10,000 letters saying, what are you guys even bothering to think about this case? It's obvious who should win here. That clerk is going to mention it.
Right.
And it may not affect the case, but the fact that people respond will show that it means something, and the court will take it more seriously. Because
okay.
let's say that it was everything was reversed and the players in this case were something different. Let's say that the plaintiff in the case was a person who believed that little green aliens told them that they need to not eat spaghetti, and that they refused to eat spaghetti while they were in the military and it went to the court. The court might well look at something like that and go, this guy's crazy. He's not eating spaghetti because he thinks a little green alien told him something to do something. And even though the law might be on that guy's side, that he could refuse a certain meal, the judges might look at it and just go, this is nuts. You know, we're not going to rule in this guy's favor.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, if they got 1,000,000 letters from people saying, hey, little green alien spoke to me too and said not to eat spaghetti, trust me, they would weigh it differently. People do need to show up, and people do need to speak up, and not only to the courts, but here's an important thing that people can make a difference with. If the court rules in our favor in this case that I've brought, the next step is going to be a judge is going to say to the state, okay, you got to create something to give equality to everybody. Then the state is going to go to the legislature, our senators, congressmen, and such, and say, okay, guys, we got to make a change, but we can't make a change till you legislate what that change is going to be and how we're going to finance it and do such and such. And so we want our legislators and stuff to know ahead of time that when that ruling comes down, we need them to take action and start doing something about it.
So there's lots of letters we need to be writing.
Yeah, and so that's something that we can let them know ahead of time. So, and I will tell you, I have met with senators in California personally, and they want to write legislation to help us. But
okay.
Their hands are tied because currently, the way the law is set up, it has to go through the justice system first and through the executive branch. And both the executive branch and the justice system are working together on the opposite side of us. And so until a court rules in our favor, there's nothing that congressmen and senators can do. But
yeah.
I will tell you that if a court ruling comes in our favor, they want to do something, and they want to know people want them to do something so that they can feel comfortable stepping forward and doing it.
Well, listeners out there, even though you might only feel like you're one person, think of all the people you talk to on the internet. Think of all your Facebook friends and your friends of friends. You know, I think about during the Bush administration when everybody was up in arms over immigration that time around, they shut down the switchboard in Washington, D.C. There were so many calls. I mean, it was all over the news.
And that's one of the other things. You're talking Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann and stuff. You know, if a bunch of people emailed them and say, how come you aren't talking about this case and how important this stuff is, they would be talking about it if they thought anybody cared.
Right.
And well, so those are the ways that we can have influence.
Well, and I think about, I mean, it seemed like to me Rachel Maddow was responsible for getting people to look into all of that C Street stuff and the, you know, how you know, the conservative Christians were influencing, you know, African legislation, you know, about gays. You know, all of a sudden she starts talking about it, and it's all over the news everywhere, and suddenly these people are thwarted, you know, instead of, you know, just being able to steamroll their ideas over on another continent.
And that's correct. And I would tell you that if she were aware of the situation that is going on, she would very likely be a person who is really fair about looking at the issues and bringing it out into the light.
I agree.
And if it came into the light, there would be a whole lot more people upset about it than there are already.
Yeah. Yeah, because most people don't understand it. And believe me, the ones that I told about it were appalled. They had no idea that, you know, they did not have the religious protections that that Christians do. They had no idea.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what's even more frightening. The groups that are advocating on the side of the state are advocating that there are Christians who don't have the same rights.
Ah.
And so they're advocating that it's only the radical Christians who want to create a theocracy who actually have rights.
So they'll even eat their own.
Yeah.
I know
that
sounds ugly. I'm sorry.
But no, it's true. That is what it is. So we're all in jeopardy. That's why so many organizations, including Christians and Catholics and a bunch of other people, showed up on our side of this case.
Okay. Okay. Well, Patrick, thank you for this 9-year effort, and I can't wait, as I'm sure you can't, I can't wait for a positive outcome in this case. Well, you said a minute ago you're just one person, and obviously look at the incredible impact you have made. That makes me, want to segue this into this award you're about to get in Washington, D.C., the Mahatma Gandhi Award. Please tell everybody about that. Let me give you permission to pat yourself on the back and just and just be proud, because we're all so proud of you. Tell everybody about it.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say, which sounds a little crazy, is it surprised the heck out of me. So, you know, I was in traveling around, and I'm like, have no access to internet, phone, or anything, and then I come back and find out that I've been selected to receive. It's called the Mahatma Gandhi Award. It's for the advancement of pluralism, and I'm going to be awarded on September 14th at the Capitol in the Gold Room, and there'll be senators and congressmen and such present, and it's a huge deal, and I'm openly a goddess man, and I'm going to be awarded this really prestigious award for my work in defending our rights. And so it's a really big deal, and I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. I'm more overwhelmed by the fact that I'm gaining that recognition, and what it does for me is show me that our entire community, our spiritual community, is starting to get recognized for who we are. That it isn't that I'm getting acknowledged because I'm a pagan, it's that they know I'm a pagan and they're still willing to acknowledge me.
Now, there's a whole list of real prestigious people who've gone before you and got this award, right?
Yes. And so it's a really significant step for us as a community, period. And I always like to think of the work that I do as representing our community. I mean, I don't do my work trying to get something for myself. I want us as a community to be recognized and really seen as serious, and that what we have to say and contribute be taken as seriously as what everyone else has to say.
No, that comes across, Patrick. This is not about your ego. This is about your service and your commitment. And we get that, and we thank you, because when you're victorious, it's for all of us. We all win.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, here's my schedule just to show you a couple interesting things that have happened quickly out of this. So I go to Washington, and I get this award. Then I have to be at the United Nations in New York on the 17th, where I'm going to be involved in some things going on there. And then in October, I have been invited to be a major speaker at a world forum on world peace and some things like that in Kazakhstan. I mean, can you imagine that? You know, and they are flying me there. And other major people involved in that effort are, you know, President Jimmy Carter, Prince Charles, Nelson Mandela, you know, a few, to name a few of the other people. And I'm going to be the person, the primary person. They're writing a constitution, which 40 countries are signing on to, about human rights. And one of the components of that constitution, it's called the New Constitution, N-O-O Constitution. And even the U.S. has signed on to it, just to give you an idea. And one of the components of that new constitution for people's rights is the rights for spirituality and religion. And as a goddess man, I am the person who is going to be proposing and writing the framework for religion and spirituality for the world.
Well, I feel good. It's in your hands.
Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't mean that they have to agree with everything I put down and they'll, you know, break it up, tear it apart. But imagine having the opportunity as a goddess man or a goddess woman to have your voice be the key forward voice to leaders from around the world at a world forum, where you are the person who's going to get to see, you know, I think this is what it should look like for all of us to be able to get along in spirituality and religion in the same world.
I don't even have the words.
I don't either, so I'm going to have to do a lot of getting everything together between here and when I fly to Kazakhstan, you know.
Well, Patrick, this might, you know, I know this is a hard question, but, you know, I'm hearing you say all of these positive things, and sometimes it's really hard to stay positive. Do you think, I mean, I know you, you know, there you came back and reported a lot of positive stuff, you know, on the last show about the Parliament of World Religions and all of that. Do you think there's a lot more good out there happening than we hear? I mean, that this paradigm shift we're all talking about really could potentially be a positive thing, and I don't know. Do you just have any thoughts on that? I mean, I know we've talked about in the past how you think things have come really far from, like, 40 years ago. You said something publicly about Goddess, and I think you said your house was firebombed or something. And then, you know, you have all of these personal accomplishments that reflect on the community, and our community is growing and everything, like you said, even the second largest, you know, religion in Washington. But, you know, with where we're sitting right now, 2010, you know, with everybody fearful of 2012, with the ugliness we hear on the news every day that just seems to be getting worse and worse, and the people out there getting scarier and scarier. I mean, is there enough going on out there to counter all this ugliness?
Well, there is, but here's how I like to kind of couch that whole discussion. It's something like this. We have made such tremendous progress over the last, you know, number of years toward pluralism and equal rights for human beings and equal justice and recognition of the sacredness of all peoples and the earth that we live on. So we've made tremendous strides forward in that respect. But when you move forward and there's opposition to that, the opposition pushes back. And so where I see us as being right now, and this is why it's really important for average, ordinary people to join in this conversation, to show up, is we are on the razor's edge. We have made the most forward progress for humanity probably in the last few years that I think could be recorded in all history. On the other hand, the pushback from the people who are concerned that that is happening is tremendous. And so we are balanced on the edge of a razor. and even maybe a few people on one side or the other pushing a little harder could tumble the whole thing one way or the other. And so we are at a point in history where every voice counts and every person can make a difference. And, you know, I want to tell you, this is something personal I don't share too often, but it's important for people to know. Most everyone who's interviewing me and, you know, I'm involved in these things, I mean, I'm doing all these really neat things like, you know, going around and speaking at the parliament or going to Kazakhstan or getting an award and stuff like that. But I want to also tell you that I, you know, have been threatened, beaten, taken into custody by government officials. You know, many bad things have happened to me for taking this stand. And so it's not easy taking the stand. But we have to do it. And, you know, the average person doesn't have to put themselves on the front line like someone like me or maybe Starhawk or other kinds of people who advocate. You don't have to put yourself in the front line, get arrested or beaten up or have your life threatened or be afraid or something like that. You just have to write a letter, you know. And I feel like if more people would show up and just write a letter or make a phone call, that it would make me safer.
Okay.
And I'm on the front line, you know. I mean,
it
isn't, there's nothing in it for me. I'm not going to get any more rights or anything different. I could just, you know, I belong to a tradition where I can just go out and walk on the top of the mountain, talk to the goddess, and do my own thing. I don't need
right.
to do this.
Right.
But I am compelled to do it. And
no,
we have other people who are compelled. And so we need to stand behind the people who stand on the line for us.
Absolutely.
And by that, I mean, I do it also. Even though I do my own work, every time I see someone else on the line, I stand up for them too.
Yes.
And that would segues into something I would like to say, and that is that a group of people from around the country have come together to form an organization, which it's an embarrassing thing to me, but they've decided to call it the Patrick McCollum Foundation. And it's only being called that because a lot of people are aware of who I am at work, what work I'm doing, and it is based solely on trying to push for equal rights for human beings, for honoring our earth, and to acknowledge that there are different ways that human beings see the sacred. For me, it's the goddess. And people can help with that. And you can just go online to patrickmccollum.org, and you can find different ways you can help. I mean, maybe it's something, maybe you want to donate some money or something. Maybe you just like to be a person who does phone trees when we got to call the government and make something happen. And mine is not the only organization nor the only one doing good. I am just doing it along with a lot of other people. But choose someone whose work you support, who you feel's voice represents you. If you don't have the time and stuff to put your own voice out and be marching and fighting and going to court and all that,
yes.
And support them.
Right.
And if you have no money to support them, then write a letter for them or make a phone call or call Rachel Maddow or something. If
right.
you have money, like you said, if, you know, 100 people sent a dollar, you know,
yep.
for some reason people think someone like me is supported by some big something. And I'll give you a clue. I have, for at least 14 or 15 years, fought for rights for people all over the world, and I received my first $25 donation last week in 14 years. Other penny for everything, including the court case and everything, has come out of my personal pocket.
Well, you know, I'm glad you're saying that because, you know, people do get the wrong perception. I mean, the same with me, quite frankly. You know, they'll look at my website, and just because I got a nice-looking website, somehow they think, oh, I must be making a lot of money doing what I'm doing. And they don't realize
well, I just try to work
it costs
a couple extra
money.
Jobs and put in 20-hour days so I can try to find a way to support what I believe in.
Right, right.
And yet, you know, what is crazy about it is with all the things I'm doing and with as little extra time as I have to work to try to make an income in order to pay for all this stuff, you know, Isaac Bonwitz, as you just said, you know, passed away and his family had a really big deal. And while you were saying that on the radio, I wrote his name down and stuff and said, send a donation to Isaac's family.
Yeah.
And when I get off this phone here, I'm going to figure a way to come up with a little cash and send him $20 or something.
Right, right.
And, you know, we can all do that. And it doesn't
yeah.
have to be to me. I'm not trying to press for that. maybe there's some other organization or some other cause you believe in, but show up.
Yeah. Be, you know, make your voice count. You know, put
right.
some energy into the things you believe in, because, you know, if we don't do it, who will?
That's true.
You know, we can't wait for somebody else to always be the one to do it. Well, Patrick, we still have a bit of time left if you have
okay.
time. I know it feels like, you know, I wanted to just sort of turn this a little bit back to politics again, although all of this really is social
sure.
politics, you know, government, you know, national politics. Last time you were on the show, I asked you, you know, how you felt about how President Obama was doing at the time. Well,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, it's a little bit later, and, you know, a lot of liberals and progressives are a little bit discouraged, things aren't happening quick enough. I mean, and you're respected out there in the community. I mean, what's your opinion about how things are going? And what would you say to people who just don't feel motivated to go out and vote in November?
Well, I would say a couple of important things. And you know, I want to say right now that I have some issues with President Obama. Not that I have major issues with him. I am extremely happy with most of the things that he has done and such. However, I, like a lot of other people, you know, probably with all of our politicians, figure that there's something more they could do that they're not doing that I would like to see personally. But here's the most important issue to me. We have short memories. I'm hearing people saying things like liberal people like me are likely to vote other parties in to do something because they're not happy with stuff Obama is doing. I think we really got to remember what it looked like just prior to Obama coming into office. Let's say he's doing the crappiest job in the whole world. I was fearful for my rights, my country, and everything else prior to that election taking place. And I don't think we want to get lost because of issues that bother us, or maybe specific smaller issues that we feel could be done better. I think that if we have things we don't like about the Obama administration, we need to be really vocal and let them know that. But I don't think going and saying, well, let's just vote for the other guys or something because, you know, we don't like everything that they're doing is the way to resolve the issue.
Yeah.
If you're going to make your voice known, give these guys a shot, but let them know what it is you need them to do to show up more. Don't make the mistake of putting someone else who has the exact opposite agenda in power, because if we do that, we will end up back where we were before Obama came in. And if you want to remember that many Republicans, you know, Obama was a Democrat, many Republicans voted for Obama. Many independents voted for Obama. And the reason that they did it were varied, but one of the big reasons is because they were so unhappy about the whole direction everything was headed. And, you know, yeah, you could criticize health care, you could criticize this or that, but the truth of the matter is we now have health care.
And
you could criticize, you know, many other issues, but we have overcome issues that have been huge.
Yeah, we sort of righted the path.
Yeah.
You know, even though we don't have everything we hoped for. Well, any thoughts on Fox News, quite frankly? You know, I worry about them constantly every minute of the day spewing what they spew. I mean, it just it seems like their influence is really hard to fight.
Yeah.
You know, and they perpetuate this ignorance we were talking about earlier, and fear and hate, and you know, it just doesn't seem like the left has a strong enough answer to that machine.
Well, here's the thing, you know, because I'm a person who tries to bring peace between different entities that are, you know, opposing one another, I seldom speak out in a real powerful way against any particular entity like Fox or anyone else. But I would like to go on the record here and say that, you know, it's clear to me that Fox News is not a news agency and that it has only a very specific agenda, and that they will go beyond just reporting things that are on their side. They will actually say things that are not true.
right.
in order to promote certain agendas. And they would make arguments that people on the other side, like Rachel Maddow or somebody else, they'll say, oh, well, they're opinionated and they, you know, they support the liberals or they support whatever. And, you know, one of the things I've learned a long time of being around is that there's a kernel of truth in everyone's argument. And I think there is a kernel of truth that Rachel Maddow is liberal and has certain things she believes in, and she does carry some of that on in the news. But the difference is this. When Rachel Maddow tells you something is what it is, it is what it is.
Yes.
She may say she likes it or dislikes it because of her personal views, but she presents the news as what the news really is.
You're going to get the facts.
Fox News does not present the news as what it is. They are an entertainment, you know, a neat, fun entertainment company. You know, if I am sitting watching TV and there's nothing good on, I turn on Fox News because it's fun to listen to the stuff they try to push over.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't take anything they say seriously. And I think that that is the mistake that a lot of people who really don't pay attention to what's going on do, is they equate something like Fox News with serious journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't.
Well, and that's, you know, I think that's what's so scary. I mean, when I hear pagans say things that are, I wonder how they're reconciling their spirituality and their politics, first of all. You know, that seems like an issue worthy of discussion. But, you know, when Fox News is obviously, you know, so anti everything, you know, I mean, everything, you know, related to social justice, you know, related
right.
to, you know, people's individual rights, you know, it's hard for me to even understand how pagans can jump on that bandwagon, you know, and there's the issue with the pagans, but then there's just the issue with, you know, the rest of the folks out there, you know, just because it's on the television, you know, I guess, you know, they don't realize that they don't have to tell you the truth.
Well, I would sort of, you know, I have a lot of different responses to that, but I'll say something. My parents are older. They're in their 80s. And my parents are liberal and have been for most of their life. And they watch Fox News and they believe what Fox News says.
Really?
And when I have a conversation with them, I'm so frustrated because I ask them questions like, my parents are on a very small, limited budget of Social Security, and one of the biggest issues in their life was health care. And so they watch Fox News, and they are vehemently arguing against having a national health care policy.
Exactly. They get people to vote against their interests.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there asking, I'm saying, you know, Mom, Dad, you guys have serious health problems and stuff, and you're saying that you can't get care and you don't have the money to afford to do it and you can't get your medications and stuff. Why would you be against a national health care policy? And then they'll say something like, well, go to Canada where you got to wait 4 years to get a surgery or something like that.
But that's
and
not
my,
true.
but here's the thing. My response to them is, well, why don't you go to Sweden where you wait 2 weeks to get a surgery, and every woman that has a baby gets a year off and a hired nanny to take care of everything so she can get her career back.
Right.
Or how about going to France, where I go to the pharmacy here in the United States to get major back surgery. I go to get a medication here, and it costs me $90 with my insurance company to get the medication. I traveled to France, and I ran out of my medication. And I walk up to a pharmacy and say, you know, can I get this from a doctor? And it cost me 50 cents.
Ouch.
You know? And I said, well, I'm not a French citizen or anything. And they said, it doesn't really make any difference. You're in our country. While you're here, you're covered. And so I'm sure there are downsides to socialized medicine and various different kind of things like that in different ways. But when I just look at it face up, there are certain values and certain things that I believe all human beings should have.
Mm-hmm.
They should have a right to equal, you know, religious and spiritual practices. They should all be allowed to be safe. They should be allowed to espouse their various ideas and views, as long as they are not trying to literally incite harm to other people, and be safe to do so. And they should be able to eat, and they should be able to be healthy and medically safe as best as possible.
And have a roof over their head in their old age.
Exactly. So, you know, we live in the richest country in the world, and what's interesting to me is, like, Fox News will be arguing people shouldn't be allowed to have socialized health care, but they feel that it's okay to give $100 billion to British Petroleum,
yes,
who's, like, polluting the entire world and stuff, and help defend them and the oil spill in the Gulf. You know, I just can't see how those two things can jive.
Well, no, I don't either. And it just, I guess it worries me that America has become so dumbed down that, you know, it doesn't sound odd to more people.
Well,
you know, that more
I
people
that,
aren't having a problem with it.
I think that, too. And I, you know, while I am a very active person, I'm not a highly political person. So I have very definite political beliefs of my own, which you can tell a little from what I just said, but I'm not a person who takes to the streets as much to push for a particular person being elected or things like that. I do vote my conscience, but I'm so busy doing, you know, trying to save humanity and make everybody get along, I don't have time to go do that. And
right,
the people who do have the time to do that should be getting out, fighting for the things they believe in. But, you know, as crazy as it sounds, I watch Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann, and Fox News, and Glenn Beck, and all the rest of them. And I
and Glenn Beck doesn't make your hair go on fire?
He does. He does. But here's the thing. I make informed decisions by seeing what everyone has to say and then researching and really looking into what the truth of the matter is. In my tradition of Wicca, we have a saying, you can call a tree a bird, but it is still a tree. And truth and perception are not the same thing.
Right.
And so what we need to do as human beings, especially in this country because we can vote and change the way things are, is that we need to seek the truth, not perception. And if even when I know an issue and I feel passionate about it, I still look into it further,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, I get a ballot, and the ballot says, you know, vote against Proposition 8 because it's going to take money away from schools, you know. And
mm-hmm,
I sit there and I go, well, I thought it's about, like, gay rights and, you know, such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get really confused because the different people make the arguments different ways. So you have to really look at what it is that you're trying to stand up for and look into a little bit. Don't just be a person who goes down to the polling box and says, oh, I like President Obama, so I'm going to vote for him.
Right.
You know why you're voting for him and know what the issues are as best as you can, because we have a tremendous extra special right in this country. And that is that our voices have power, and we need to speak up. And it's getting back to that same thing of you can write some letters, you can do whatever about the things you're passionate about.
Absolutely.
And so that's about as political as I get, is that I would
urge
people.
Well, that's enough. I mean, those are important things. And you know, and we're saying it's political, but, you know, I have trouble even calling it political. To me, it feels like it's just moral. You know, the things we're talking about are morality. It's, you know, having compassion for your fellow man. You know, it's not about whether you're going to bomb another country. I don't know. Somehow it just seems different to me. You know, it's not about a political ideology. You know, it just seems like it's how we treat each other as human beings is what we're talking about.
Well, if we can't start at that most basic place, then there is no hope. And, you know, my guiding principle for everything, and this is one I would like all people to, I'd like my ideas to be something people consider, and here's my thought. All religions and spiritualities and even science all kind of believe that everything began from some central point. So, let's say all creation. Some people think it's divinity, some people think it's God, some people think it's the goddess, some people think it's two atoms smashing together. but they all believe in this principle that something happened and then there became everything that is. And the way I like to look at it is that everything initiating from some central point, whichever point of view you take to look at that, makes everything sacred and connected, because we all are made of the same stuff.
Right.
And whether that is the stuff of the goddess or whether it is the stuff of, you know, photons or atoms or something smashing together, makes no difference. You and me and even Glenn Beck are the same sacred stuff. And we got to start off as human beings there.
Yeah.
You know, that, hey, you know what, I don't like that guy. I might even like to punch him out for some of the stupid things he says. But he is sacred, and I need to find that in him, and he needs to find that in me. And then the rest of the stuff can be neat conversations around a fire or something.
Right, right.
You know, but we don't have to kill each other over it.
Well,
or even let one another starve, or any of the other horrible things that happen in the world, because there is enough to go around, and we are all made of the same stuff, and we have the same obligations to one another.
Absolutely. Well, so Patrick, how will we follow you and find out the results of your trip to Kazakhstan and this constitution that you're putting together? I mean, will we be able to read it online at some point, or do you?
Yeah, I think. Well, first of all, I had given my information for patrickmccollum.org, and there will start. We are just putting that online now. It's just getting put together. So, you know, there is a website. You can go on it. You can donate. You can read some things. But I haven't even started blogging and such on that site because I'm just too busy trying to do, you know, get in the word, go to Kazakhstan, all these things. But there will be regular updates on that. So that's one way. Another really good venue to follow some of the things that will be taking place aside from your show is the Wild Hunt blog.
Okay.
Because, you know, they often will follow and connect with things relating to this case and also the stuff I'm going to be doing in Kazakhstan. And so, you know, I usually try to let them know what is going on, and if they feel it's newsworthy, they'll probably put it on.
Okay.
And actually, there's a few newspapers and things, you know, that are following this story also. But, you know,
well, and we want to remind people to put October 8th on the calendar to send good thoughts, you know, to your attorneys and thank the Jones Day attorneys, I believe. You said it was Jones Day?
Yes, Jones Day.
Yeah.
And I would also like to give a real special thanks to one individual. It sounds kind of strange. I'd never do this normally. Who supported me while I was in court at the last hearing before we went to the high court.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the guy who emailed me out of the blue, and his name is James McCollum. Don't know if he's related to me or not. And it turns out that he was the center of a famous landmark case called, I believe it was McCollum versus the Board of Education, where the prayer in school issue was taken on, and he won. His mother brought the case like 50 years ago and set precedent in the United States Supreme Court for many of the rights that we have from minority faith to be able to, you know, not be...
For the separation of church and state?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And that gentleman contacted me and told me that he was so proud that I was taking this case on and that he knew what it was like to be under duress and all those different things, and he wanted me to know I have his support. And I just thought that was an incredibly unique moment in history for someone who changed the whole history to have the same name as me and call me up, and our case numbers are the same.
Isn't that incredible?
Yep, both our case numbers are 333.
Now, what is that about? Isn't that
interesting? I would say it's something really cool, but I, yeah, that's a whole other discussion. But, you know, I think that there is something big going on that is a good thing. And I believe that there are bigger powers, and since yours show is, you know, the voices of the sacred feminine, you know, I would just tell you that my work is informed by the goddess. And she's the one who I represent when I speak, and I let her speak through me and guide me through the things that I do, and I truly believe in that. And, you know, in following that course, I have always ended up in the right place at the right time and am able to make differences. And I think that all of us who are listening, especially those who are goddess people, need to recognize how powerful it is to follow the voice of the sacred feminine, and that her voice is, for whatever reason at this time, needing to be heard. And we need to raise our voices to be her voice and make this a world that we can all live in.
Absolutely. Beautifully put, Patrick. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I mean, I hope you know, but let me say it anyway, how much you're appreciated. Seriously, you know, I really feel like whenever you make a victory, you do it for all of us. And I am just so proud you are on our side. So thank
you.
Well,
I really appreciate it. And I would also like to give credit to all the other people in our traditions who do fight and don't get on a radio show, and don't get in the newspaper, and such, because the truth is I couldn't do any of the stuff that I do if all the other people weren't doing their parts, too. And so we're like a team.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when we win, it's all of us that win.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, thank you so very much. I appreciate your time. It's becoming more and more valuable because you have lots to do to help change the world, and I'm so glad, you know, you can use your influence to make this blue marble a better place.
Well, I'm sure giving it my best shot, and so
may you and
all our listeners be blessed.
Thank you, and
thank you for allowing me the opportunity.
No problem. It's my pleasure. And just a reminder, for those of you who would like to get to know Patrick on a less political way, again, I want to give you the name of his book is Courting the Lady. And he's also a wonderful jeweler. Is your website for your jewelry different, Patrick?
It has my jewelry on the website, too. For those who don't know about my jewelry background, I used to be a world-class jeweler, and now I'm so busy saving the world, I don't have time to do that much. But I have done work for the Queen of England, President of the United States, about 40 movie stars, and yet I offer jewelry to any person for things from $10 to $1 million. And every piece that I create is sacred and guided by the goddess.
Well, you know, when we listen to her, she rarely takes us down the wrong path.
That's for sure. And so, and also in my jewelry, I mean, this is a little plug, which probably I'm not good at asking things for myself or help with stuff I'm doing, but I will tell you that 30% of all money I make from any jewelry thing, whether it's somebody's wedding rings or some sacred piece or anything like that, goes directly to finance the work I do for all this stuff. It's my only way of financing my work.
Okay. Well, that's good for people.
So, you know,
if
you don't want to donate money to somebody, buy your husband or wife a nice gift.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. Then both, you know, then you end up helped and they get a beautiful piece of your unique jewelry.
Absolutely.
Well, Patrick, thank you again so very much. I wish you well in everything down the road here, and I hope maybe toward the end of the year you'll come back on the show again and bring us up to date on how things went in Kazakhstan and the court case, and who knows what else you'll have on your plate by then.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to say I wonder what she's got lined up for me next. I'm trying to stop asking now because I really like to get a little sleep.
I hear you.
All right.
Well, listen, have fun, and thank you so very much. You you are just so appreciated by your community.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Okay.
Well, listeners, if you've tuned in late, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness. And as I always say, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, these are the new values and benchmarks that will save the world. And we've been talking to a favorite pagan of mine, Patrick McCullum, so instrumental in making things happen in the world. Obviously, just a selfless guy who has heard the call of the goddess and walked down the road she put before him. And I feel so very glad for all of us that he's on our side. Well, we are coming to near the end of the show here, and I want to just bring up some upcoming guests in case you haven't looked ahead to see who's going to be on the show in the coming weeks and months. We have some pretty big names. I hope you'll tune in. One is Vandana Shiva. She's an ecofeminist, a contributor to the Women's Environment and Development Organization, winner of Save the World and the Sydney Peace Prize. She's the author of Water Wars. We're also going to have Sister Joan Chittister. She's a Benedictine nun with the Sisters of Erie in Pennsylvania. She is the founder and the executive director of Bennett Vision. She's an internationally renowned speaker and author. She's been interviewed by people like Bill Moyers in PBS, and I'm going to get to interview her. I hope I do a good job. And if any of you have questions for her or any of these guests, please email me. She is sort of a controversial figure, Sister Joan, because of her claims against the church perpetuating the inequality of women. And she demands that the Catholics ordain women. We're also going to have Clarissa Pinkola Estes on the show. She is the author of the book Women Who Run with the Wolves, Myths and Stories of the Wild Woman Archetype, and lots of other books. Margot Adler is actually on the show next week. Margot, she's a journalist, a lecturer, a Wiccan priestess, a radio journalist as well. She's been a correspondent for National Public Radio, and she's the author of Drawing Down the Moon, a book that was considered watershed in American neo-pagan circles because it provided the first comprehensive look at modern nature-based religions in the U.S. And she also had another book out. You might have heard the title, Heretic's Heart, A Journey Through Spirit Revolution. Francesca Gentile is going to be back by popular demand. We're going to discuss the relationship between God, goddess, and sex. You might know her. We tease her and call her the diva of divine relationships. We always have fun, and I think we're going to have fun with that topic, God, goddess, and sex. Jeannie Davis Kimball, she is a scholar, an author, a documentary maker. She's the founder of the Center for the Study of Eurasian Nomads, author of the book Warrior Women, An Archaeologist's Search for History's Hidden Heroines. She did some archaeology on the steppes along the Kazakhstan and Russian border that yielded evidence that the women among these tribes called the Sauromatians and early Sarmatians, these were early nomad peoples, tribes, that these warriors were probably or possibly related to the Amazons. Now, there's actually a documentary out that she participated in where they actually checked the DNA of some of the women that actually live in this region now. And I think it, if memory serves, it was pretty conclusive that she was right on with her theory that these early nomadic tribes were probably related to the Amazons. Other great people are coming on the show. Ricky Ott, she's an activist and marine biologist. She wants to talk about that we really need to worry about what's going on with BP, that it's not over just because, you know, we're not hearing much in the news anymore. She was around during the Valdez spill, and she's written two books about what happened to the people there and the environment. You know, they're playing this all down like, oh, don't worry, things are getting fine. Well, that's probably not the case. I hate to use the word whitewash, or they want to avoid panic. But anyway, Ricky is going to talk about, what she believes we need to be watching for and concerned about. She's also an advocate to amend the Constitution and abolish this idea that corporate personhood is right and just, and because we obviously can see already the effects it's having on our democracy. I mean, Fox News' parent company just gave $1 million to the Republican Party. Corporations, should not be able to donate unlimited amount of money to our politicians. Otherwise, they'll be bought and paid for more than some of us think they are already. Other people coming on the show or Joyce Chapman, she's a wonderful success coach. John Rasmussen, he's a contemporary shaman. He's going to discuss prophecies about the fall of the masculine warrior archetype. Donna Wolfe Cross, the author of Pope Joan, the woman who spent her entire life posing as a man and ended up becoming Pope. In Rome, the Catholic Church. Susan Vaughn, animal communicator, is going to be on the show. Linda Savage, author of Reclaiming Goddess Sexuality, is going to talk, in the future here on the subject of cronehood. Abigail McBride, musician and ritualist, is going to discuss the alchemy and art of doing powerful ritual and the seven stages to ecstasy. Jerry Studebaker, author of Switching to Goddess, she's going to come on and talk to us about her book and witty woman and a really fun book. Even if you know about the goddess, I think you'll enjoy hearing Jerry. Jo Carson is going to be on the show. She's the producer of the documentary I think you'll want to know about, maybe even get a copy for yourself, Dancing with Gaia. Dorothy Atala. She has written a book, Conversations with Goddess, Encounter at Petra, Place of Power. Now, I've been to Petra in Jordan. It is an awfully powerful place. And Dorothy had some interesting experiences with there, conversations she believes were with Goddess. And she shares that in her book and with listeners. And one of the last people I'll mention for now is Lorian Vignier. She is the founder of the Isis Temple and Isis Oasis Sanctuary, just north of San Francisco, California, in Geyserville. She's going to talk about how Goddess has lit the way for her. In fact, the title of her book is The Goddess Bade Me Do It. You know, it just seems like Goddess takes hold of people and just steers them down a path. And, you know, we just hear that, you know, over and over and over again. And if you like what you're hearing, there's lots of archives you can tap into. This month, I've actually been on Blog Talk Radio for a year, but before I moved to Blog Talk, I was on another radio station, and all of those interviews I did for 2 years actually live on my website. So if you go to my website, KarenTate.com, you can tap into 2 years' worth of wonderful interviews. Those are shorter. Those are only 30 minutes, but still relevant. They have not become dated in the least, and people have called those archives a treasure trove, and I thank them very much for that because lots of wonderful people have lent their wisdom and knowledge to those archives. People like Matthew Fox, he was excommunicated for his goddess beliefs. Father Roy Bourgeois, he's a Mary Knoll priest who recently was excommunicated because he said the church was discriminating against women and not ordaining them, and he wouldn't recant. Margaret Starbird, Starhawk, Carol Christ, Reverend Stacy Bourne of her church. If you don't know about her church, you want to Google herchurch.org. It's a feminist, Methodist or Lutheran, I forget which now, I get that confused, in San Francisco. Big Purple Church, wonderful place. Images of a feminine face of God all around the sanctuary. They make goddess rosaries. definitely check them out. I've had other people like Wayne Redman, Miranda Shaw, Grandmother Agnes of the 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, David Hillman, Selena Fox, Angie Buchanan, Genevieve Vaughn, Patrick McCullum has been on the show before, Barbara Walker, Charlene Spretnak, Rhiann Eisler, Eleanor Gadden, Isaac Bonowitz, who just passed away, and I'm so glad I got him on the show before he passed over. Louisa Teach, Lydia Rule, Max Daschau, Stephen Geringer of the Joseph Campbell Foundation, John Lamb Lash, Phyllis Chesler, Jean Shinoda Bolin, Jean Houston. I mean, it's an awesome group of people. So take advantage of it, you know. And while you're there on my website, www.karentate.com, there are also free downloadable meditations that you can download or listen to for your pleasure. You just go to the button that says Goddess Store and just scroll down past my books and the cards that I sell of sacred places and classes that I'm doing and things like that. And if you just keep scrolling down, you'll get to the free downloadable meditations. And again, take advantage of them. They're there for you to enjoy, and I'm always glad to hear that you do. And let's see, some things coming up that I want you to be aware of. The Gaia Festival is going to be coming up soon. It's November 12th, 13th, and 14th in Santa Barbara, California. What is the Gaia Festival? Well, at the Gaia Festival, here's a description. We gather to celebrate, to send love and healing to Mother Earth, our original mother, through multicultural expressions of music, dance, art, storytelling, ritual, and ceremony. We welcome people of all genders who wish to restory and revision destructive myths that have degenerated the human physical form and the earth. Through our collective stories, we remember and heal our fragmented selves and Gaia. Gaia Festival is an eclectic mix of presenters, musicians, artists, healers, conscious vendors, and participants, all contributing to create a special and must-attend weekend event. Some of the presenters are yours truly. I'm going to be there giving a presentation Saturday morning. There's also going to be Stephen Geringer of the Joseph Campbell Foundation, Miranda Rondeau in her wonderful frame drumming, Catherine Savella, Paul Cronshaw, Elisa Robles, Panzuma. You can read more and at the website, GaiaFestival.com, GaiaFestival.com. There's special discounted rates going on right now, so you want to check that out before the deadline passes. This is going to be held at the Fess Parker's Doubletree Resort in Santa Barbara, California, again, the weekend of November 13th, 14th, and 12th, 13th, and 14th. Some of you email me and say that you'd love to meet me. You know, when am I going to be doing a class again? Well, my Cakes for the Queen of Heaven classes just ended a few weeks ago, but I will be back before the Gaia Festival. They've asked me to minister a Sunday service at the Goddess Temple of Orange County on Sunday, September 12th. So I invite you to come out and lend your support and energy, and would like to meet you. Also, I've been saying that we're in the process of putting together a sacred tour of goddess sites in Turkey for 2011, and we are closer than ever on that. I'm just waiting for the web person to finish the website, and pretty soon that will be up and you can peruse it. The tour is for men and women, and it's going to be the first 2 weeks of November of 2011, so you have time to save up for it. And we're only going to take about 20 people, again, men and women. So if you think you're interested, make sure I know about it, and make sure you're getting my communication. Let's see what else. Well, I guess, you know, I will close by saying that I'm always happy to come give presentations or workshops or talks or slide presentations to groups around the country. As I like to say, have sistrum will travel. That's kind of my motto. So if your group or church would like to sponsor me in your city, please just get in touch with me. Rates are very reasonable. And there's a list of talks that, you know, prepared talks that I have on my website. You know, you can check that out. Also, I have a YouTube channel where I have some wonderful videos of the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving, Sekhmet's Mountain Sanctuary, snippets of a lecture I gave at a Whole Life Expo on the Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. So lots of links to people making a difference and wonderful articles. So please go to my website, www.karentate.com. Well, it's about that time we start to close the show, and I invite you to close your eyes as we're about to share our evening closing prayer. So if you would just take a deep breath with me to sort of bring yourself to a deeper focus and where you can take in these words. And so let's begin to shift our focus and go within, you know, go to that place where we connect with the divine, with our mother, with our sacred self. Goddess, Mother, your names and faces are many. Your ideals have been tinted by cultures, eras, politics, and social trends. Yet the core of universal truth remains in every tree and brook, every star and stone. This is the nucleus of all humankind's spirits. Help us to see this central root as a binding tie through which we can all be nurtured. While our words are different, they mean much the same. The differences that separate us come from limited human vision, which cannot look beyond dogma. Broaden our understanding and vision to see as you see, to identify each other as brothers and sisters of spirit. The path of beauty is many things to many people, but it always leads back to you. Help us recognize that you are the sacred parent. Any power so great as to create our diversity cannot be confined to one image or one creed. Help us find wonder and joy in our differences and appreciate our similarities. Today and always, we are all children of one family, both divine yet mortal, the family of humankind. Let acceptance among people of all faiths be cherished as a great virtue. So be it. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope you enjoyed our talk with Patrick McCullum. I certainly think it sort of served the purpose of not just an interview, but also considering the social consciousness and social justice and politics and, you know, world events that, you know, were within the scope of the interview. I think it sort of sufficed for our What's the Buzz segment for this week. And again, please come back next week. Margot Adler is our guest. And remember, if you can't listen live at 6 p.m. Pacific, you can always catch us from the archives at your convenience anytime. And I hope you'll remember that you can go to Blog Talk and go to my show page and hit the button there near the top where the name of the show is. It says follow. If you hit that button, you will automatically get reminders of the show so that you know who's going to be on every week. And please call in at 718-766-4662. Write that down someplace. Or email me in advance questions you might like me to ask my guests on your behalf. And I always appreciate when you send in articles or things that you'd like me to share with listeners. So, again, thank you, listeners, for your time and for your feedback and for your contributions. Your feedback is gas in my tank. And as always, let me say in closing, may we all find our voice and use it in whatever way we can. Let us be her sacred roar. Good night.